You're listening to the GamesIndustry.biz Academy Jobscast. I'm James Batchelor, Editor-in-Chief of GamesIndustry.biz. This is the second part of our four-part series. We're doing a number of podcasts looking deeper into the world of recruitment as part of our Get a Job in Games Month. This week, we're going to be talking about recruiting the next generation, or more accurately, preparing them to be recruited. I have with me this week a panel of four educators from around the world, or at least both sides of the Atlantic. Joining me today is Tracy Fullerton. Please tell me a little bit about yourself.
I am the founding director emeritus of the USC Games program and the director of the Game Innovation Lab at the University of Southern California.
Marvelous. We have Thomas Corbett.
Hi, I'm assistant teaching professor at Carnegie Mellon University. I'm with the Entertainment Technology Center, which I'm also an alumni. And I teach for the IDEATE network, the Integrative Design, Art, and Technology program, where I teach a number of the courses in the game design minor.
And joining us from the UK is Nia Wern.
So I'm Nia Wern. I am the course director for esports, game studies, and communities at the moment at Staffordshire University. But I've been teaching in and around game design for the past 15 years, and a lot of my teaching and my research focus around employability in the games industry and creative industries.
And capping off our panel is Nick Dixon.
So hi, Nick Dixon, senior lecturer at Falmouth University, where I teach game development and writing, business and professional practice. I also head up their new incubation program for postgraduate games companies. Before that, I spent around 20 years in industry designing, developing games on most consoles. And in fact, before I came into the academic arena, the only book I ever had on my desk was Tracy's book. Thanks for all the help, Tracy.
That's awesome. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you've helped write a lot of my modules.
Brilliant. Packed panel, packed show. We've got lots to be getting through, so I'm going to start launching into questions. First one's quite a broad one. This is kind of the overall topic of today's show. What are the best routes from education into industry for students? So, for example, is it better that they go out and set up their own indie company, learn kind of the realities of running a games business, or is it better that they seek employment at an established studio first? Because I do hear arguments for both over the years.
One of the questions is about choice, because I happen to be the employment tutor as well, and I did a report this week, and I looked at GI.biz and the job site. I always go there first. It's the primary area we all go to in the UK if you're looking for work. And there are around 500 jobs on there when I was looking late last week. About 200 and something in software, about 150 in art, but 80 in production, 88 in production, and 70 something in design. And design has far fewer. And this covers both senior, mid-level experience and junior positions. And let's face it, how many students have we got exiting all of our universities in the UK, in Europe, in the US? And so one of the questions is, you know, for some of them, what choice do they have but either to go to a route where they're setting up their own studio, they're going down an independent route, or alternatively, they're looking for other opportunities to use their skills in other related markets, user interface design, for example. So I think maybe there's a question over for some of them, what choice do they have but to go down that route, because the employed positions are simply not there in the numbers to support the numbers we're educating.
That's an interesting point. I would also say that it's very much an individualized question, because, for example, if a student has done a number of internships while they're in school and they've already been exposed to working at, say, larger companies, but their goal is to be an entrepreneur and start up their own company, then they may be, you know, prepared for it, right? If they haven't, if they've done, say, internships on smaller teams and they've focused more on skills rather than, say, leadership or entrepreneurship, then I would say, you know, they need to round out their experience. They probably need to go and experience life at a larger company and understand how games work as a business rather than starting their own company. So it's a question that I don't think there's a single answer to. You know, and every student is going to take a different path through university. and they're going to come out ready for something different at the other end, right?
I think that choice thing is a really interesting bit to pick as well, because it's also not, I mean, geographically, the limitations, if you're in one area, for example, in the UK, if you're in Leamington, there's a lot more choices for companies and studios you can go into. In areas, say, like the north, west, or say Staffordshire, where I'm based, there's actually far fewer companies around. So if you want to stay in one place, or you might have to for a variety of reasons, because you really want to, you know, live somewhere, then actually, you might not have the choice to go into a big studio. You might be looking at setting up something. There's a lot of students with a lot of different sets of responsibilities. So just treating them as a sort of a singular object also doesn't really help, because they each have their own sort of, some really want to set up things. They've got their own goals. They've got different goals. Other ones are really looking for the company experience. Some are looking for small company experiences. Some are looking for adjacent sort of bits of the industry. So I think just sort of saying either or doesn't really work, but looking at the bigger picture is much more helpful for where the best routes for graduates.
I also think that the role that the candidate is going for plays a really large part, right? Programmers are going to have a pretty decent time finding a job. I have a number of super qualified sound designers and who would love to work in industry, and there are only maybe two or three positions in a season coming up for entry level. So, you know, whichever role, whatever their specialty is, if they're a broad-based programmer or if they're specifically a character artist, it does kind of depend on what the market is going to support at that time. I encourage them to take any opportunity that gets them into the industry, because once you're in, then you start building those connections. And I've always found connections to be the best way to get your second, third, fourth job.
So that's really interesting, is it? Because it is about, and I do think that in some of the skill areas, the environment is changing. When I look at design, you know, a lot of design jobs that I see advertised are now heavily technical compared to when I first started, which was much less technical in many ways. You know, I could have gotten away with word base for most of my design documentation and getting ideas out there. And that isn't the case anymore. And so I think that the landscape for designers, for example, is changing, and changing very rapidly all the time. But it also depends on the ecosystem in which they originate. And Nir, you talked about Stafford, and of course it's different in the States. It's very different in Cornwall from it is in Leamington and Guildford. And I guess it's for us to also try and create environments as much as we can that are mature ecosystems, where there is a variety of opportunities for both mature companies, immature startups, so that our pipeline of students have a destination that they can start off in. The onus is also on employers to have a realistic expectation of offering startup positions for graduates. I think sometimes nearly every job description has we require this many years of experience. So I think it's about also realigning employment opportunities for graduates who are coming out, so that it's realistic for them to apply for these jobs.
This ties in with the conversation we were having last week on the show, where someone said that there are actually more graduates coming out that are qualified for entry-level positions than there are entry-level positions to fill, which is something we've been talking about. There just aren't the jobs out there for the number of students that the education sector is producing. What are the potential solutions for that from academia's point of view?
It's a really good question. You know, interestingly, we've always had a very small program for exactly this reason. You know, we're not trying to graduate hundreds of students, right? I mean, we graduate a class of 15 graduate students every year, and another 15 at the undergraduate level. And we try to hand place them, right? And when they are interested in starting companies, we have a program that they can go through, where we will help them set up the legal aspects of the company. We'll help them build their business plan. We actually help, you know, launch them, right? And you can do that when you have a very select program. And that's part of the intention, that we wouldn't be graduating too many for the industry to hold at that moment. And that's something that academia really has to look at and own up to itself. Like, are you prepared to help as many students as you're graduating, right? And that's, you know, you're absolutely right. I think, you know, it is on academia to, I guess, realistically and morally look at, are we graduating too many students, right? And should we be more select? Now, many organizations actually don't have that choice. Some public universities in the United States have to take as many as want to take the course, right? So they don't actually have an option. USC is private, so we can set our own parameters, right? But one of the things I will say is the industry itself is growing. So what we call the game industry is also this sort of permeable, growing entertainment technology field. And it's not necessarily just games anymore. And so, the other way to look at this is grow the field and what we think of as the field and prepare students for entering things like themed entertainment or immersive theater or even the board game industry, which has a lot of interesting opportunities, right? So sort of growing what we think of as the opportunity space for students is another way to look at it.
I'm laughing because I literally have a module that is developing and preparing students for the board game industry. And quite often what I get is, oh, this has nothing to do with games. And I'm like, oh, it really does. And I've just made you write an essay about that. But it's, again, a lot of what we have to do is making them aware of the vast variety within the industry and related things. So I've got a lot of students that are looking into community management. They're not all marketing and PR. And while they are, they're studying games, they're doing live briefs with games companies, they're doing things focused on games, the opportunities we're throwing out to them are not just, these are only games ones. So certainly we're looking at larger leisure industries, we're looking at fashion, we're looking at, so obviously I have esports students, so that link between sort of merch and community management and peripherals, these are all sort of really going, there's a vast array of things that you may not have considered you have skills and relevant knowledge about. And this is actually this huge field of things you can go into. And that's one of the things that we've certainly been doing, is making sure the students can see this sort of wide range of opportunities that are available to them with the skills that they have coming off our courses.
I think that's really very important. It's consideration of the wider skills that they require. So for example, in my design modules, I don't teach them design, I teach them design thinking. In incubation, I have to get them to transcend pure entertainment and consider themselves to be a business. The games industry is not about making games. The games industry is about making games companies that make games. And you have to kind of understand this important distinction from the commercial point of view. Of course, there's always also individuals who are creating art and other fields, but it is that width. There are plenty of other opportunities for you to apply your skills and disciplines. Design thinking can apply to many different arenas, from board games to healthcare to app development to accessibility. And I think that we tend to silo our students into, old-fashioned fields that we all think we understand, design, programming, production, writing, when actually, the Venn diagram is far more complex than that. And the industry is far more complex than that. And so it's about embracing that. But I think at Falmouth, the reason why we push so hard to establish an incubator is not just to create an ecosystem locally that means that the skills pipeline can remain within the area and help the economic growth of the area, but it's also about offering a full circle of education, from outreach to postgraduate development of your own studios, which can then offer internships and can offer employment. And we have to build those ecosystems. If we just rely on the Leamington, the Guildford ecosystems, it will not be enough. And therefore, yes, the onus will be on us to battle our natural impulse and need to take on all students to start to select, which I don't think UK universities can quite afford to do.
So this is one of the things that the program that I teach for the Ideate Network has, I think, been a very interesting example of what you can do when you start to offer education outside of just one discipline. And the idea behind the program is that any student at the university, regardless of their major, can get a minor in its game design, its sonic arts, its physical computing, its integrated environments, a number of different fields. And what we really see is some people come in saying, I want to build games. I know I want to do that. I want to take these classes, and I'm going to complement it with my degree in computer science or fine arts or business administration. Other folks are just curious. and they just want to get a little bit of additional experience, and maybe there's something there that they take back, right? Most of our classes are interdisciplinary, team-based environments, just like a game studio would be. And that's an experience that they don't necessarily get to have. If everybody on your team is a biology major, everybody thinks exactly the same way. They have the same curriculum. And being able to expose themselves to those different categories of students, those different categories of thinkers, results in kind of better soft skills. And that's really a lot of what we're pushing with this program is teaching them to understand a little bit more about how to work with everybody else and bring their expertise into that, as opposed to being the master of the entire domain.
Yeah, completely. One of the things that I say to the designers is, actually, I feel that communication is your most important skill. And when we're doing professional practice, I spend more time concentrating on the soft skills than I do on the hard skills. I assume that they are developing and self-reflecting enough to develop the hard skills necessary. But actually, it's the soft skills that are probably going to get them the job. I was quite amazed when I was talking with a friend at a university where they have quite a large number of programmers, but actually their employment rate for the programmers was quite low. But it's because they're not helping them cover off social areas that they might find otherwise quite difficult, which is preventing them from getting the jobs that they require. So I do think that there's a lot of work around the development of the self, which I think sometimes we don't concentrate on. We concentrate on the discipline rather than the development of the self. They're only with us 3 years out of a 30-year career. So it's important that we educate them to educate themselves and make them more confident individuals. If they've got natural talent, that will develop along with it, right?
I can't agree anymore. I'm sitting here just nodding my head. I agree 100%. In fact, I heard a great thing from one of our students recently when we were doing a sort of a postmortem on our advanced games class from last year, which is a year and a half long process where they develop games in large size teams, about 30 students, and they all take on the roles. So the directors, the producers, the art directors, they all take on roles and they're mentored in those roles. And what he said was, it was great. He said, this is like a industry LARP. And they all come into it thinking it's all about making their game. And what they realize coming out the other side is it's all about basically building their character. And I was like, oh my God, it's success. You know, we've succeeded with this kid. He understands, right? And you know, I think this idea of soft skills, you can train someone, you know, you can pop the knowledge we were talking beforehand, pop Maya knowledge into their head, but that's not going to help them in 10 years when everything's changed, right? What's going to help them in 10 years is the ability to learn new tools and the ability to work with new people.
Yeah, we have a load of collaborative sort of game development modules, and we have our second years work for the third years. We have a junior and senior setup as well. So that hierarchy starts to play in really nicely. But yeah, the amount of times that students have come out of that going, that was the hardest thing I've ever done, but it was the best. And you didn't teach me anything new, but I've learned loads. Like, this is our chance for you to showcase everything else we've taught you, all of those other like hard skills. This is where you've got to put them into place. And this is where you've got to make something at the end. And it's a fantastic sort of module, but it's really core to sort of how we think about making sure that our students are then ready to go into studios of variety of sizes and working on different projects. And also that capacity for them to build up portfolios in sort of different roles and just sort of reflect on, well, actually last year, my seniors didn't really develop our team all that well. So when I'm senior art or lead art, I'm going to do things differently, or I'm going to do things differently as lead design, and actually think about how they want to deal with people and how they want to deal with maybe the students that are not quite motivated, or the students that's got a different set of problems with coming in every day, and how do they deal with different people with different kind of skill backgrounds. And again, all of those skills they're learning, and they're starting to think about how they can articulate them and how they can put them into practice when they go into the industry. And yeah, such important elements of the kind of things that we do at Staffs. And I know other games courses around the UK have really similar modules. I've seen the stuff at Falmouth, and yeah, just those group work modules, which are obviously hated by students to start with, really are the most important things.
Well, most of them won't have even done any group work at the point where they come to us. And this is where really education must start way before they get to us. Mm. And this is where our relationship with earlier education is really integral. Because I think that they're so used to having their cup filled up by educators in secondary education that they're not prepared for the do it for yourself approach, which is going to be most rewarding for them when they arrive with us. And it's about that ability to reflect, as you said, and that ability to be resilient while you're doing it. Interestingly, there is now a movement to do co-curricular elements within other artistic and creative and business orientated disciplines within the university, which actually I think is a really good idea, although I think students will find that very difficult to begin with. This is a really good way, because I suggested that they do that through being presented challenges from lots of different sectors. This is a really good way for students to understand how their skills will apply outside of the industry which they have narrow-mindedly set their vision on. And too often we say, here, go and be an astronaut. But, you know, we don't really, you know, say what that means or what the breadcrumb steps are. But I think they need a wider vision than that. So co-curricular challenges from different sectors are a really good way for them to identify skills. They can still beeline for the industry if they want, but it's really important that they're shown other options, very valuable community social options which their skills can apply to.
I want to pick up on something that Tracy was talking about there. As you said, like, yeah, there's no point teaching them Maya skills because Maya might change in 10 years. Like, that is always something that's interesting to me about games education, because the industry changes so quickly. Like, development techniques, development technologies, the tools used, they change so rapidly. How do you keep up with that and adapt your courses in a way that makes sure that you're producing you're teaching graduates like the most relevant skills, the most relevant knowledge to better prepare them for the industry, not just the industry that is when they graduate, but the years to come?
You know, I think it goes back to something that Nick said actually earlier on. You know, we don't want to teach them to say, you know, design a, you know, match three. We want to teach them design thinking skills, right? We want to teach them system thinking skills. We want to teach them. So in every field, and that's just an example from a designer's point of view, but in every field, in a producer, you don't want to teach them, you know, Jira. What you want to teach them is social engineering and management, right? Of people, right? Herding cats. You want to teach them that. And planning and task breakdown and things that don't change, right? And so forth and so on. You can go down all the specializations. You can say, I don't want to teach you the tools. Of course, we will touch them and we will learn them. And, you know, that's, we all, one of the ones that my students hate, by the way, is Perforce, right? So when they come in, we consider USC Games to be a studio, and the studio has agreed, we basically set foundational programs that we use together so we can work together. And one of them is Perforce, and, you know, of course we use Unity. We also use Unreal, but Unity is our sort of central tool. And so everyone has to come in and learn those tools. There's no getting around it. Now, in 10 years, 20 years, those are going to be totally different, but we have taught them core skills around sharing code, for example. That's a core skill. What is the etiquette around working together on code? That's the core skill. The core skill is not like wrestling with Perforce, right? So I think that, you know, in every area, what you look at is, okay, here's the tools we use, but what is the core concept, the learning goal that we're actually trying to address that will serve them going forward in their careers?
I mean, sometimes it does just come down to Herculean efforts amongst the staff of getting to grips with new software or updates. I remember the summer between Unreal 3 and Unreal 4. And I think we realized that we had to make sure that we were ready to teach whichever new version it was by the September. And I think it was like, oh, it's everyone can get it. And it was like May. And I remember that certainly the engines teams going, we are in for quite the summer of learning this to the point where we can teach it. Because if we aren't teaching it, then our competitors will be teaching it and our students will be coming in. You're not teaching, you know, up to date information. You're not teaching industry standard software. So I know that our 3D teams and our engines teams and anyone dealing certainly on the software side, they do put a phenomenal amount of effort in making sure that they know what's happening and what's coming up, but they are designing assignments that make sure that students aren't just being parrot taught things, that they can access all of these skills and the rest of the fantastic amount of sort of tuition and things that are out there. So it's not just us and going, so we designed an assignment, and my favorite recently was recreate a self-portrait in a Fortnite style. So it's a really nice assignment. It was a really fun. It was really quite easy to mark because you could see, well, does it look like you or not? And then it's very hard to plagiarize, which is another interesting thing when you come to design assignments. But also they had to then, all of these students had to learn how they made that in their own way, using the tools available, using all the different plugins, how they did that. That wasn't sort of one session. That was seeing the students be able to adapt and really research themselves what was out there in order for them to achieve this one goal. So I think, yeah, sometimes just the effort that goes into making sure that we're teaching up-to-date skills, up-to-date workflows, up-to-date pipelines, all of that just is phenomenal. And sort of, it's one of the things, I've stayed more in the sort of design paper-based stuff. So I don't really have to teach about new pencils every year. My dice have remained the same, but hats off to the teams that are really sort of deep in the mires of software updates, all of that, because the actual dedication to that element is phenomenal.
It's a funny thing. I just want to build on what you're saying a little bit. It's a funny thing about updating right away, right, too, because when you're on a production team and, you know, someone releases a new update to the tool you're using, the entire team does not jump on that tool, right? You have to fork the code, you test it, right? I mean, there's a whole process, right? And so one of the interesting things about thinking about the games program as a studio is that we make a commitment to be on a certain version, right, as a studio. Now, the students are free, obviously, to download anything they want on their machines and do anything they want. But as a studio, we have a certain version we're working on. And then if we decide as a studio that it's time to actually upgrade, then we do so. But learning that restraint is actually another one of those soft skills. Learning about process, about when and how you upgrade your tools, is another part of those soft skills that will serve you, because there's the worst mistake ever is when you come in and you find a junior programmer who's upgraded your entire project, you know, in the middle of the night, because, oh, they let the new beta version.
That learning patience is really hard for them, because they're like, but it does shiny things, like, will the rest of your game still work? And they're like, don't know. It's like, let's not go there then. Let's do that separately.
There is this I can guarantee that Rare will not be changing Sea of Thieves to Unreal 5 anytime soon and migrating across. There's a reason why their cartoon style works quite well for them. I think that, you know, there is sometimes this, and I have to be very careful how I say this, but I think sometimes there's this, I had a student, you know, said, oh, you know, if I don't get a first, or I don't get a 2-1, I'm not going to get a job in the industry. And I said, that isn't true. I said, it is, the portfolio is what counts. You must work on the portfolio. We're going to look at the portfolio. Look, you know, if you fail or you get a third, I might ask you, you know, what happened? You know, there's a character element that might come through in some parts. So it is important that we set their expectations realistically, and that they don't see things as prizes to achieve. Otherwise, then they're not going to get the shiny thing that they want. I think that we have to reset realism and expectations at all times. I am quite hard on students at times, because the analogy that I have is that when the Romans trained their soldiers, they gave them heavier shields and heavier swords. And so in some cases, we have to load a little bit of the pressure on them. We have to squeeze them a little bit in order to make sure they're ready for the environment that they're stepping into, be that self-employed, employed, contracted, whatever that might be. And so we try and do that. If I have a third year team, you know, I'm going to say, what's your break even? Well, how do we reach that? Well, you know, you have a student finance, you can equate that to, you know, your dev month rate, you know, dev day rate, whatever you want. So I try and pack them with reality, and reality is what is necessary to understand. Do you need this tool now? Is this tool important? Do I need this skill to progress? And part of that is about assessing when we talk to the third years about professional practice, I say you have to have an understanding of, you know, if I'm thinking about myself, I always have a 5-year plan, right? I always know roughly where I want to be in 5 years. Even if that plan's going to change, I want to have a rough goal where I'm going to be in 5 years. If you think about yourself in the same way, where do you want to be? Where are you now? Are the two most important questions you can always ask yourself. And what are the steps that are going to require me to get from here to there? And to the ability to realistically assess where I'm at with my skill set. These are the things we have to be teaching them. These are the real skills that they will be expected to use. So I think when it comes with software and everything like that, you can distill all of that down into realistic expectations and projections of where you want to go and analyzing the process for how you're going to get there. And you can apply that to any discipline in our field.
One of my favorite things to do is I teach a VR class. And so every semester, you know, we've got new equipment has been released, throw it into their hands and say, figure it out. Right. Here's figure out what are the capabilities of, you know, the Vive, of the Rift, of the Vive with the wireless headset that lets you walk around a larger volume. Where are the edges of that? Now you have a Quest. What can you do with a Quest? What can you do with a Daydream? And let them discover what those limitations are and what they can accomplish inside of those limitations. And I think when they're talking to, you know, a recruiter or a hiring manager, saying I can program for the Quest is great, but saying I learned what the capabilities of the hardware were and how to operate within those parameters is going to be far more valuable.
That's a great point, by the way, especially in the experimental stages of their academic career. And I just want to add one more thing is on the other side of that. And it's kind of speaking to what Nick was saying about seeing yourself in 5 years. We actually, the advanced class that I talked about, at the end of that, they ship. They literally have to ship deployable product at the end, and seeing that rubber hit the road where we essentially say, okay, this is it, you know, no more changes, just bug fixes, right? And are your marketing materials ready? And is this an executable that you can send out to, you can deploy on something like Itch or Steam or whatever it is, right? And for some cases, they deploy on consoles. We actually, you know, just have one of our advanced games this week just launching on, I saw on Xbox. So, you know, the thing about learning that particular skill, many students learn how to make a game. But one of the things that when you see those advertisements about, having, you know, done this many games, shipped this many games, one of the reasons they say shipped is because we all know that taming the beast of a game and actually getting it into the hands of players, consumers, you know, selling it and having it be stable software, that's a whole nother side of the equation, right? And university is a safe place. Generally, we don't force students to finish everything and polish everything. But that's something we've focused really hard on, because if you don't, then you essentially are graduating people who only know how to come up with the one half of the equation and not that last percent that makes it a viable product, you know?
I think that's a very, very interesting point. There is, we do the same. So every year they have to make and complete a product. They have to get that on Itch, and they have to cut, that is a demo that is presented. Actually, we run an expo every year. We have Andy Payne, we have Imre Yele, we have Troy Baker. These people are looking at this content. And so it is getting reviewed. But it ultimately comes down to the very simple fact that if you want to learn how to make games, make games. But make them in realistic environments, and it's for us to try and create the most realistic environments that's going to test them, right? They all hate teamwork at the start. Nir, it's exactly what you're saying, but great, because you're going to work with an awful lot of people that you're not necessarily going to get along with, but you're contracted to. And I often say to the team, I said, but the issue is that you're not employed by us, and so we can't just, you know, tell you to do X, or you're not in charge of this other person, so you can't. I said, but there will come a point where you will be, or you will be employing someone else. And our job now is to get you to navigate those waters, to understand how you work with other people, how you apply the wisdom of teams to game development, right? So, yeah, fascinating.
giving them the experience of not just the fun part of brainstorming and coming up with the unsexy parts of just, you know, knocking out the bugs or optimizing the textures or whatever. It is a very important step, right? They go into the industry and suddenly find, I had one friend who interned for The Sims for the summer. I said, that must be amazing. How was it? He goes, I programmed couches. That's gonna be somebody's job, right? And understanding that it's not all glamorous and not all fun is important if people are gonna make this a career choice.
That's absolutely true. And there have been occasions where you've got a team and they do something with a build, like they really mess up the build. And I will sit down with them and I say, you realize that if you are now employed in our studio and you just done that and you're in probation, you and I would be having a very, very difficult conversation for you. And it's really important that they see the reality of this. But this is good. We can afford to let them trip over and fall and stumble and bruise themselves. This is the safe environment which they can do that, because they're not going to be, you know, unless they, you know, seriously offend someone, they're not going to get, you know, taken down the hall.
I think you all need to adapt your courses to see, like, basically challenge students to see who gets fired. And I'm doing that in air quotes on a podcast, which doesn't work, but who gets fired the least?
Done that.
I actually have an assignment about that. Yeah, I have an assignment. We do role-playing leadership assignments, and one of the assignments is hiring people, and one of the assignments is firing people. And so some people wind up playing the part of the person being fired.
Amazing. Amazing. I need to do your course.
We've done elements within the group work where we had people who were fired from group work and they were put into a separate studio. And that was quite really interesting to see people suddenly realize where their skills lined up and how it felt to suddenly be removed off projects. We don't do it very often, but we have done it before now. So yeah, it's, like I said, it's certainly interesting. But how you manage group work is such a minefield of different sort of skills from an education point of view, not just like sort of how the students then adapt to it. We've had these conversations with students.
A lot of the things that were being said there tie in weirdly to, so earlier today I recorded a video panel about how to become a games developer for EGX Res Digital, which I believe won't be aired until after this episode goes live. So weirdly, if you're listening to this episode like the moment it comes out, you're listening to this after the thing that is going to be on later, the weird time travel nature of podcasting. This is just glorious. But within that, just to kind of emphasize the point of finishing projects, it was, I believe it was someone from Creative Assembly was saying, like, the amount of students or people who will like do 80% of a game idea and then either come up with a new idea or find that it's hard and they'll not quite finish. And there's like, there's so much you can learn in that last 20%, even the last 3-5, even the last 10, there are so many lessons there to be learned. So I'm just going to kind of underline that point. Going way back to something Nick was saying a lot earlier, he's a hypothetical student who's worried about not getting a job if he doesn't get a first or at least a 2-1. What are the expectations of studios? Say a student wants to go to an established studio. What are the expectations of established developers and companies in terms of how high the standard and the quality of graduates' work is? And how have those standards changed over the years?
It was interesting getting into education, because prior to that, when I was recruiting within a studio, and this is a number of years ago, so, you know, I think academia was still in its infancy, really, in terms of game development. But I would often be frustrated that I felt that I then have to spend 2 years retraining those people to be, you know, ready for the office environment. And I think that has changed. I think that games education has changed to now better prepare people so that they are useful candidates. And I think that's really interesting. Look, you know, there's also nothing wrong with getting a good result and aiming for a good result. You know, certainly if you go that extra mile and you earn that top grade, then you will have deserved that. And that still reads well. But I still go to the portfolio first. If I'm looking for a particular kind of skill, I want to see what their skill is. I want to see how they think. If the checkboxes there are right, then I'm going to bring them in and find out what they're about and what they're like. You know, one of the best interviews I ever had was something that was followed up by a 2-day test where I'd work with the team. I'd sit in the studio and they gave me a task related to the product that we were making at the time. And I remember I got that job because I they wanted me to two things. They wanted me to design the AI and they wanted me to design the control system. And I came back and said, look, I've got two layers. I can do one, but I can't do both. Which one do you want? And that's what got me the job. So I think that portfolio is absolutely important, imperative. And we spend a lot of time teaching them about how to present the best portfolio, what works, what doesn't work, how to follow that up with, resumes. We get grads in games actually to come in and co-deliver on some of our professional practice stuff. So they're getting up to date latest advice from a recruitment orientated perspective. And then it's about, carefully navigating the arena of interview and discussion and that social side, those soft skills. But for me, every time, of course, if someone performs really, really well, then that's a great indication. But I don't necessarily look at a 2-2 and consider them to be a lesser person because they get a 2-2. I look at the portfolio, and every industry person will always go to the portfolio first, every single time.
Yeah, I mean, our focus again is all on the portfolio. There's obviously a correlation. The ones who are putting in the extra work who have the really developed portfolios are probably the ones doing really well on assignments. So they're likely to be getting those higher grades. And I can only think of a couple of anomalies in that over the years, and they're few and far between. But yeah, the ones who are really trying, the ones who are applying, we spend a phenomenal amount of time sort of talking to industry and looking at advice and sort of publications and talks about, and we obviously have the UK conference come in, we grads and games, everything that we can be involved in to get make sure our students are put in front of people who will say exactly the same thing I've been saying, but because they're saying it, the students go, oh, Nia, did you know that I needed a portfolio and a CV? Like, I've heard. So that's kind of making sure that we are on top of what the industry are expecting, recruiters are expecting, all of that, then yeah, that's we pass that on to our students. We spend a lot of time going through websites, portfolios, ArtStation's work. We're making sure that everything makes sense and is cohesive. And we talk a lot about this sort of cohesive environment. I always think that I had a student who was quite sort of like, I'm a character artist. I was like, well, let me have a look at your portfolio. And it just had a single piano. And it was like, is the piano a character? And they were like, no, it's a piano. It's like, okay, well, how can anyone else tell that you're a character artist? It's like, well, I put it at the top. It's like, no. Everything else needs to be in this. Everything else needs to be, if you're a character artist, your portfolio needs to have characters. Just saying you're something, you need to back it up. And they were like, oh. I was like, maybe you're not a character artist. Maybe you're a phenomenal prop artist. Maybe you're really good at something else, but you have to work at this and maybe look at jobs that fit within what you want to be doing and what, and quite often you'll get students that they have this idea in their head, and once they start to put together their portfolio, they suddenly realize that actually there's something else and there's a different bit of the games industry that's really focused for them. And there's a really different bit that they've never really considered, that, they've never really thought about UX, but actually everything they've done previously up until now has been UX. They just hadn't realized. So we do a lot of sort of going through our students, mock interviews, portfolio reviews, everything that you can imagine we could to make sure our students are ready for when they go to interviews.
I think all those things are right on. And, I can't agree more about having a portfolio of your work. And it's why, I think we and so many other programs have an emphasis on the students shipping games and being able to talk about the role they played on those group projects. But the other thing I would say is, I personally, and I tell my students this, I never got a job in the industry from a resume, ever. I always got it from a friend of a friend, or knowing, networking, basically. That's the crack, right? That's how you get to talk to people. And so, one of the things that I also tell students is you've got to be involved in the community of game design and development. You've got to be where the people are talking about it. You've got to involve yourself in groups and, special interest groups and in, things like GDC and we have in our backyard, we have Indiecade, and volunteer, be part of it, be a conference associate, be a volunteer, talk to people. If you love someone's work, reach out to them. It's easier and easier every day to make connections. And then we also have a prerequisite for our advanced projects that they have to have an industry advisor. So it's part of their education that they have to learn to reach out to people who can help them. who maybe are working on similar design ideas or similar, business strategies, whatever it is that fits with their project. They need to reach out and talk to people, learn to talk to people about their work and get them interested in their work. Because the skill of getting people interested in your work is also a very important part of getting a job. Your ideas need to be communicated. They can't just be cool ideas. You got to be able to talk to people coherently and engagingly about them. They've got to have a portfolio. They've got to have the great resume. They've got to have all those things, but they also need to be social beings. And, you know, for a lot of the students who come into this field and want to be in school, that's the hard part, is because they're not necessarily extroverts. I'm not an extrovert, but you learn to put that extrovert face on and go out and speak with people. Right.
Yeah, I completely agree with Tracy that, you know, I will tell my students that you will get more jobs from people you know than you will from just dumping your resume into an online folder somewhere. You have to have the portfolio ready so that if somebody's ready to talk to you, right, you've got it at your hip, you're ready to go and send it to them. And you have to be really good to work with, because this is a really small industry and everybody knows everybody after a while, and a bad reputation will get around very quickly. So learning how to work well with others is key.
I always maintained that if I did that kind of block walk from the GDC talks to the W bar and I didn't bump into anybody, I knew that my time in the industry was done. But I think it's knowing whether...
That's a hard thing to do, by the way.
But there is knowing that there's stuff that happens on the show floor and how you manage that space, how you approach people, how you kind of break into a conversation that's already happening, or, you know, just go to the bar. You know, you'd be surprised how many people hang there and do business, you know, in a more comfortable environment, knowing when to interrupt, when not to interrupt. These are key skills that they need to develop and learn. And it is a very, despite the fact that, you know, it can be seen is a very isolated industry, you know, the person sat in front of their television or group. It's an incredibly social industry. And I think that they have to develop those skills or learn how to kind of get past particular blockages they might have.
Yeah, and I spend quite a lot of time to my students talking about trying to do that in virtual social spaces as well, sort of virtuing, like, you know, be on Twitter, but be your authentic self and talk about this and, you know, enter conversations and talk to people, and because they don't always have opportunities to go to games conferences and they aren't, you know, obviously the last couple of years, there haven't really been any obviously physical things, but it's like, well, if there is networking on Gathertown in the middle of a conference, go actually network. Don't just go, oh, I don't know anyone. I don't know how to do this. That's one of the, because we've mentioned before, it's the harder skills, those social elements. And they kind of, if couldn't get students going like, how did get a job? And I'm like, well, they spoke to someone and then they followed it up on LinkedIn and then suddenly they had a job. They're like, oh, but my work got better grades than them. Like, but did you apply? Did you talk to those people? And they're like, no. It's like, well, there you go. Did you apply for the job? No, I didn't feel I was good enough. Well, they did, and they applied, and they were really personable, and they chatted to the person on Twitter, and they chatted, and then they got the job. And they're like, oh, is that how it works? Like, yeah, that's how everything works. And there's, you really have to be able to play that game as well. And it's hard. It's really hard to get students on that. And I think in the last year has been probably one of the trickier things, because I think all of our students are really just fatigued from online lessons, online learning, online events, online jams, online everything. And then you go, well, there's this fantastic online networking opportunity. And they're like, nah, can't, I'm too tired.
But there's strength in all this as well, which is, so I think that, you know, all of that's really, really important to have. And also, if you maintain good relations within your cohort, you never know when those people in your cohort are going to get jobs elsewhere. I had three students in the space of the last couple of months all get jobs at Firesprite because one student knew another student knew another student, and they recommended each other into the positions and referred each other into the positions. It's good to maintain those friendships. But yeah, ultimately, you just need to kind of keep your options open, keep pushing, and keep kind of understanding that everything is connected. And, you know, eventually all the dots will join up for you. You just have to keep pushing. You have to keep pushing hard.
I would happily talk to you guys about this for another, or rather listen to the four of you talk about this for another hour. But sadly, I believe we have run out of time. Thank you so much for joining us today. That's been absolutely brilliant.
My pleasure.
Welcome.
I'll happily talk about this forever as well. So.
Okay, thank you very much for listening. You can find our previous GI Academy jobs cast on the same podcast feed. All of our podcasts are on the same podcast feed. Last week, we talked to recruiters from various studios and publishers about how they find the talent they need, the challenges they have in finding the right candidates. We're going to be back next week with another episode on onboarding and the process of bringing people into studios, bringing them into various companies and preparing them for their new employment. In the meantime, you can find more articles exploring the various careers available in the industry and how you can get some of the most wanted roles in the industry as part of our Get a Job in Games Month on gamesindustry.biz. And obviously, that's the website where you can get more news, insight, and analysis into the world behind video games. Thank you very much. We will see you next week.